This is On the Podium on the BBC World Service, with me, Eliza Skinner, Paralympian Scout Bassett, and BBC Athletics commentator Ed Harry. Each week, a Paralympic or Olympic star explains how they conquered the world, whilst I just about conquered opening a jar of spaghetti sauce. I ran hot water over the top, which honestly might disqualify me. I don't know if that's within the regulations. Got it open, though. Easy question. What superpower would you have?
I want to be able to fly. In a lot of dreams, a lot of the time, I can't remember the dreams in their fullness, but I know I'm flying. And I know that it's easy. I just kind of want to do it, and I'm doing it.
What kind of flying? Are you hovering? Are you zooming? Are you swimming through the air?
I'm hovering, and it's very easy just to leave the ground.
And so
if I want to be flying, I'm often like looking down at stuff. So I guess a bit more like being in a deep swimming pool and almost kind of moving through the air like you were swimming through deep water.
Okay.
But it's effortless, and it happens a lot.
You kind of have a reason to think already that you would be good at it.
I honestly do think I'd be excellent at it, because my own personal experience of dreaming suggests to me I would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scout, what about you?
I wish that I never slept.
Okay.
That I could just be awake all the time and go, do everything I need to do. And I feel like I don't want to miss anything.
That feels to me like one of those Twilight Zone type, like, be careful what you wish for things, where, okay, you get that, but it also means that you're crazed and you're...
No, but see, I wouldn't have that
right,
effect.
Right. I know. I just can't help but associate that.
The thought, right?
Yeah.
Oh. Like, I hate when I have to actually go to sleep, because I'm like, oh, I could be doing this. I could be doing that. I could be doing this.
What about you?
See, I've thought about this too much and thought about the upsides and the downsides. It would be very cool to be able to talk to animals. I do worry, though, you would be constantly barraged with an onslaught of animal chatter.
Yes.
And I don't think that they have that much interesting stuff to say. But it would be cool, right? To be like, hawk, my friend, and have a hawk be like, what's up? I've also thought being able to control other people's digestive systems would be infinitely powerful. But that feels like more of a villainous thing. Because no one can destroy the earth if you've just given them the bubble guts real bad. You know, they've got to go take care of that. You know what? If I could snap my fingers and teleport.
Yes.
Yes.
That I think I would want. That feels good.
I would totally do that.
I'd also like to be able to do that anywhere in time or space, just like forward, wherever you wanted to go, I'm just there.
You don't want to be messing with the space-time continuum. Have you seen no movies? This doesn't lead someplace good. You step, you know, at the very least, you step on a butterfly and you ruin...
One less butterfly?
No,
it's worse than that.
No.
Okay, what about a lot of people say, if I could have one superpower, it would be to read people's minds?
What a nightmare. Nightmare.
I think
absolute
the same
nightmare.
Thing. I'm like, they're like, I'd love to be able to read people's minds. I'm like, I don't think you'd want to, actually.
No, if they're thinking something good, they tell you. If
you wouldn't want to know what people are thinking.
I mean, I think that and invisibility are the two spooky, creepy ones. When people are like, I would like to lurk in the corner of a room undetected. No, absolutely not. Huge red flag.
It's really weird. In my dreams, sometimes I have two anatomical limbs and sometimes I have a prosthetic. But it's not like I lived like a whole lifetime before I've been pretty much an amputee my whole life. So it's so weird that I dream with like two anatomical limbs.
When you do you notice it? Like every time are you like, oh, hey, that's different?
Yes.
Or do you just kind of go with it?
No, I know it in my dream. Like I know when I have... I'll be like, where's the prosthetic? Oh, wait. And then I even do a whole, like, little second before I wake up where I'll be like, oh, I got my leg. And then I'm like, oh, no, this is just a dream. You know?
Wow.
Strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And rather appropriately, our guest this week goes by the nickname The Hulk. So, Ed, who is on the podium?
Our guest today won Olympic shot put silver in Tokyo. And while that achievement was rightly celebrated, what happened next on the medal podium had an even greater impact. With a simple gesture, crossing her arms above her head to make the shape of an X, our guest did something for all people who are oppressed. Raven Saunders, welcome to On the Podium.
Thank you guys for having me.
We're so happy that you're here. We have some photos of your career and life that are going to sort of guide the conversation. Why don't we take a look at the first one right now, Ed?
And we are on the podium. That's our show. And this is you on the medal podium in Tokyo. But as I've already alluded to, it's a little bit different because you've received your medal. You're there with the gold medalist Gong from China and Valerie Adams, who won the bronze medal from New Zealand. You're standing on the silver medal plinth and you've crossed your arms above your head and you've made that X shape. I know you spoke about it at the time, but Raven, what did you want to be saying with that gesture in that moment?
In that moment, I didn't want necessarily the light to be taken off of any of my other competitors at all, which is why I waited until the conclusion of her national anthem. At the end of the day, it's about respecting everyone from every culture. And then in that moment, for me, what I wanted the world to see was that at a place and in a time when you have so many people trying to tell you what not to say and telling you what you can and can't do when certain things you know are important to you and are important to so many other people around the world. And I feel like as an athlete and as an ambassador of the United States, it was my role to take on not just the responsibility of trying to obtain something as materialistic as a medal, but really trying to obtain what the sport and what the Olympics really is for. And that's bringing us all together, trying to understand one another and trying to appreciate the differences that we all have and the differences in our backgrounds.
That's amazing. That makes me think there's a way to express anything that you need to say as long as you pick the right time and the right way to do it. You wait until after her anthem and... when did you decide that you were going to make that kind of statement?
Since like 2016, really, that I wanted to do something that could help people because I knew that this was the stage. I knew that there was no better time. I knew that after COVID and everything that the world had been through, so many people especially were mentally in or and are still in a tough space that somebody had to say something. Someone had to speak up.
And how did you decide on that specific gesture? I mean, did you try a few other ones out? Or... No, I'm kidding.
Oh. Did you practice, rehearse?
I honestly wish that I had practiced because those uniforms were really small.
A little restrictive.
Especially for like someone having as much muscle as I have, like lifting my arms up, like part of the look in my face is like, yo, I'm kind of tight. Like, I hope my stomach isn't coming out right now.
But I've committed.
But like the statement was one of the things that we talked about, X inside of the circle representing, you know, the movement and representing all people that are oppressed. So as athletes, the whole message was to cover everyone, people with disabilities, people mentally challenged, people who of different racial backgrounds, religions. It was really to cover all bases. And also in a way, it was like a kind of a challenge. I mean, when you look at what happened with Tommy Smith and John Carlos and how they ended up taking away everything they had. And I was ready because I had a conversation with John Carlos about like the ramifications of everything that came afterwards. And while being on that stand, having that X above my head, running through my head, the fact of like, I could lose everything, but also in that moment, I really didn't have anything to begin with. So
it scares. It really scares governing bodies.
And it's stepping out of line.
It really is. But I feel like that's been a part of me. It's pushing the boundaries and pushing the limits. Everything that's come after, just me opening up about my story and saying these things, the amount of people that come to me saying like, hey, you saved my life today. Literally, I break down in tears every single time I get one of those messages because I'm like, if they were to have taken it all, I would do it 100,000 times again and again and again and again. And it's one of those things that a lot of people aren't willing to do is face the fact that you may lose a lot. And do I have time for people coming in my comment section messing with my mental health? And that was another thing that I had to worry about.
There was so much heat around this issue of protest. And this is a big catch-all phrase, isn't it? And the IOC had said, oh, you can talk about things you believe in press conferences, but you mustn't do things on the podium. What happened to you afterwards? Because I know the IOC was going to look into this. What happened? Did anyone have a conversation with you?
Oh, definitely. I made sure that it wasn't a protest. Like, what can you say that I was protesting against? I was really just genuinely raising awareness, which was something that Team USA and the USOPC got behind me 100%. Letting me know that I was supported in that moment, especially as someone who was open about mental health, having that level of support around me during that time was astronomical.
It strikes me that that if you have something to say and you're given a platform, if you don't say it, if you don't find any way to express it, there's almost like an inner discord of like, I'm not being what I am. And that's awful for your mental health. So I wonder, after doing this, how did it feel?
Was the best thing possible for my mental health. Throwing that X up and allowing for people to let them know, like, it's okay to be you. You can do this. Like, it's okay if you have challenges, if you struggle, be yourself and let the world see it. It really allowed for me to really open up my wings even more so than I feel like I already have. Showing the world 100% who Raven is on all sides, who the Hulk is, like, and also when the Hulk comes out of the Hulk, who Bruce Banner is as well.
Yeah, both personalities have authenticity.
Yes, yes. And especially in a world where we're so caught up on social media and, you know, making things seem one way to the world, a lot of people get lost. And I myself have been a victim of it as well.
You mean like lost in seeing other people's reflection of you rather than your own?
Yes, other people's expectations, other people's visions of, like, you know, what it is that I'm supposed to be doing or how I'm not supposed to be doing things.
That really feels like the stuff that just breaks a brain. That trying to
appease other people,
appease other people and hold this idea of, that you're not even sure of, someone else made up and that's who you're supposed to be. And, but you have other feelings. I got to get rid of my phone. I'm sorry.
I mean, from a career point of view, I remember watching you kind of sort of sweeping through the ranks. You won US collegiate titles. You won a medal at the World Under 20s. You went to Rio. You weren't too far away from a medal. But not long after that, you really had your dark moment, didn't you? And it kind of ties in what you were saying to Eliza then, that all tied in with how people saw you and how you identified yourself as you are an athlete, you are strong, and you are a winner. It really did. I mean, it fell apart, didn't it? What happened?
And that really was like the turning point for me. It literally was like an intersection. If I went right, I go home. I go left, and that was me carrying out the end of my story pretty much. And looking back at it in the turning point of reaching out to my therapist and her responding and really me taking the time to go home and having people like put me in the right places to deal with a lot of these things, it really changed the course for me in understanding who I was without track and field, that what I did wasn't who I was. And that I can love this thing and I can give it everything I have, but I can't let it also destroy me at the same time. Really learning balance within myself. It's a beautiful journey to be able to understand and learn yourself. And I really challenge a lot of people because it's hard. It's very hard going back on a lot of challenging, traumatic moments from the time that you may be 5 or 6 or 8 and dealing with and processing those things. But those were some things that I had to do. And I had to learn that my mental health, if I don't work it, it's going to fall apart.
And in your case, you talk about an intersection. It really was, wasn't it? That if you drove one way, you were thinking of driving your car off the road and crashing your car, and we wouldn't be here talking to you now, possibly.
Yes. And that's another reason why that symbol really held such weight for me. I saw my journey. And I saw like that moment and that turning point. And I saw that being on that podium was also another turning point.
What helped you to be able to continue forward where you didn't go that other direction? What tools were you able to utilize that helped you to make that decision?
Honestly, I was lucky. Because the fact that I even sent that text was an outlier, because a lot of people don't. And the fact that I said in my mind that if my therapist doesn't text back, then it is what it is. Had certain things been slightly different, or I realized or recognized certain things or had certain tools prior to, But I will honestly say that I am one of the lucky ones that by reaching out, it did save my life.
You mentioned you learned who you were as a human. And yeah, I think any career where you are recognized for one thing, it's so easy to forget about all those other human parts. And I'm just wondering, what are some of the human parts that you recognized? What are some of the parts of you that flourishing?
The parts of me that I've really been able to embrace and enjoy is like the light that I can bring to people. Like I always saw and thought that track was like what I did because, you know, how good I was. But I realized that me as a person, I can bring great energy. I can bring fun. And that's a great gift. And I was like, yo, even if I don't have shot put, I can still bring a lot of happiness to the people around me.
I think it's a foreign concept to a lot of people, how to bring happiness without a shot put. But, you know, you've cracked the code. Right.
I mean, and that's the thing when you get so wrapped up in it. I thought that the shot put was what was bringing the joy to people, but it was really who I was, my hard work, how I can turn it on for so many different things. So it was really just seeing all of the potential that I had in myself. But if I wanted to and I really wanted to put my mind towards it, I could really give it a good shot.
Do you feel like in the Black community, there is any specific resistance to talking about mental health?
On one end, I will say that so much more of the community is actually going into therapy and actually giving it a try. And that's one of the things that's so nice to see. Even, for instance, my mom's best friend had sought therapy. And I was like, yo, and that was because my mom was telling her about it.
That's a whole different generation.
Yes, totally different. You know, you have us who are telling our parents like, hey, it actually does help. But also on the other end too, from the standpoint of trusting the system, availability of resources, knowing the resources, the people in the positions actually understanding like how to help, because sometimes for like wanting to help someone, you have to have a deeper understanding of the background of where they come from or something similar.
Or be a part of that community.
Exactly. So the resistance sometimes may come from, oh, well, there isn't someone that looks like me, so they don't understand me. And already from going into any type of health profession where we learn to distrust the system, It's really hard, but I feel like people like talking about it, it makes it a lot easier. And every time I hear someone in the Black community or even people in general, but especially in my community, because I know how difficult that has been for us, I'm like, oh my, yes, yes, thank you. Thank you. That's what I'm talking about. Yes, yes, yes. Because when we've previously or anybody, I feel like in almost any community has talked about therapy, it's like, oh, you crazy. Oh, like something's wrong with you. Like that'll be, or it'll be jokes around that. But if we can change that tone to, yes, I'm happy for you. I'm proud of you. I'm happy that you're working on these things. It gives people more of a, okay, I think I actually do want to go back again versus feeling down and ashamed of actually going in and dealing with it.
Do we have another picture, Ed?
We do. We have a couple of pictures. These are both from the night that you won your medal in Tokyo. And the reason we've chosen them is, first picture is a few minutes after it's all finished. You're celebrating, you're smiling, you've got the USA flag behind you, huge smile, big bright eyes, everything's great. The other photo is from probably less than an hour before your throwing. And people became very used during the pandemic to the face masks that we were all wearing, and people had patterns on theirs. You're throwing in a mask, and it's one of those nose and mouth coverings. It's green. It's got really big gnashing teeth. It's a Hulk mask. Your hair's half green and half purple. It's scary. You're yes. Really nice talking to you, and it's lovely and everything. So when did the Hulk nickname begin? And kind of, did you embrace it straight away? And how do you kind of use it?
So it began like my freshman, going into my freshman year of college. We were all like sending pictures in, and just me, I sent, it wasn't even a headshot. I think it was like from here to like here of like just me flexing.
From your nose to your chest?
Yes, from my nose to my chest. And it was like pure traps, like my shoulders. I had like some pecs. So I'm like, okay, like this is like my picture. So like the Hulk name came like in the midst of all of that. And it was something that really stuck. Because I'm like, yeah, of course. Like I love direct stuff. I love it. Especially like in track meets, that is completely me. I am the Hulk. The whole scary look thing and fear, it's on purpose. It's intentional.
It works. It totally works.
Competition.
I mean, the Hulk can't go in there and walk in and I can't be all dainty like Wonder. It doesn't know. Like I'm living up to my name.
Are you sure? Have you tried it? Have you tried a dainty competition?
That's the contrast that I give to the people, because I knew that everyone, like, you know, when you see the Hulk, it's always like, the celebration was more so like, you know, the happiness side, it's all come down. I've calmed down. The hype is over. I've woosahed it out. We're ready to go. We're ready to have fun. We're ready to party.
You're listening to On the Podium with me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry. Our guest is shot put silver medalist Raven Saunders.
One of the more memorable moments I remember from watching the games is you just talked about you're celebrating and you had quite the move. I don't know if it was a twerk combined with, it looked like a lot of twerking. Yes. I remember obviously seeing the joy that you expressed, but how cool it was to see somebody that, you know, we're used to seeing sprinters with celebration moves. We don't really see it from the field athletes too often. So did you practice? Did you know you were going to do some of those moves? Because you clearly knew the camera was coming to you.
I really didn't even know that the camera was still on me. I promise you, and I promise to everyone, that was not on purpose to twerk on national television. That was not my plan. I'm like, okay, I walked like enough outside of where like the camera was supposed to cut out. And I'm like, yes, we did it. And it was like supposed to be like a moment between like, you know, me and my friends, that the whole world really just got a chance to witness like the pure joy in it. And it was so funny because people were like, man, why'd they cut it out so quick? I'm like, because they probably weren't expecting that.
Fanning themselves in the control room.
Just a little too much. So we're going to just cut on out to the next part.
Well, personally, I was here for it and I loved it. So it was just an awesome moment.
Hey, stay tuned for the next celebration.
Yeah. How do you top that?
Oh, have we been working on some new moves?
Working on it mentally, like practicing.
Can you get
it.
Backup dancers? Is that an option?
All of it. We're gonna get it rolling. So yeah.
You mentioned in discussing your mental health, the fear or the possibility of losing your passion for this thing, and I was wondering, where did you originally find the passion? How'd you find shot put, and why is that the thing for you?
I didn't even know what it was. I found shot put like how a lot of people do.
I didn't.
Oh, gosh.
No, but my basketball coach, he was a thrower in college, and really just him being by my side, guiding me and showing me like what track had to offer, like taking me, like I remember the Junior Olympics and actually seeing that many kids from all over the country, then doing research and seeing like, yo, these people travel all over the world. And for a lot of the people where I grew up and where I lived, I mean, we barely left the peninsula. So the opportunity of going out and seeing so much of the world and being able to witness and get to meet so many different people from around the world was just like, yo, like I want to do this. Like how do I get there? Like what do I need to do? And that's really what drove me.
And shot put was the way in. I've seen other shot putters talk about the expectations on how they look for health, especially female shot putters, that like people look at their bodies and are like, you should get in shape. And it's like, all I am is in shape. I am super duper in shape. Do you encounter that also?
I used to, but not as much. Because for me, once I got good at it, I was like, well, my body helps. So I don't care how big I am. Like, hey, this is what you guys want.
It's a moneymaker.
Yeah. Yeah. But confidence and also like, you know, body dysmorphia when it comes to throwers, especially women, female throwers, is very rampant, especially in the collegiate system. And it's one of those things as to why I'm very like open about, hey, like, this is me, you're gonna get it all. Because I really want these young women to see, like, you don't have to fit this mold. Because when you're a thrower and you don't have the body of sprinters and distance runners who you're around all the time, like, you know, it leads to a lot of self-doubt and it may transition over to what they're doing. So my thing is, I always try to tell these young women whenever they come into contact with me or whenever the coach is like, yeah, they do it in practice, but they can't get into me. I'm like, it's a confidence thing. You have to start believing in yourself because you can do it. You're worth it. You're beautiful how you are. I mean, like, the weight's going to move. Like, look at me, you know?
Yeah. I think actually, do we have another photo, Ed?
This is like one of those, I think, like a summer's evening, the shadows are getting long. And this is just you. I'm terrible at fashion.
Oh,
but
yeah.
To me, this looks good. It's blue and white stripes. There's like a shirt top. And so you're laughing at me now, guys. And a pair of shorts and a big pair of square sunglasses. And you're striking a bit of a pose.
Yeah, it's like a short suit with a midriff moment happening too.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, that's what I was hoping to say. This is it, isn't it? This is showing I don't just wear my sports kit. You don't just see me in the throwing circle. There is a me that happens outside of all the track meet stuff.
Because this was also like during that period when I went through like an awakening period of like who I was outside of the sport. So really like showing the world, like, you know, I don't have to throw a shot put all the time. So I went on like a fashion escapade of like, yeah, like I look good. Like, you know, so... And we all need moments of like just appreciating ourselves and loving ourselves. And I don't care what anyone thinks, I am beautiful, you know, like just moments of that.
I love that. I'm always like amazed by people that have like.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you definitely pull it off because not many women could do that.
Thank you. We've always been so boxed in and so self-conscious about ourselves. And not really worrying about what makes us happy. If I like how it looks, I'm going to wear it. My friends made a joke, yo, you got on a lot of colors. Well, hey, I'm gay.
I actually wanted to ask you just as an extension from that, your story, who you are, represent a intersectionality of so many different communities and people. And I wonder if that is something that weighs heavy for you at times and what it's like to be that. Because I know that, you know, I mean, not in the same way, but, you know, being a woman and a minority and having a disability, sometimes all of that together is just a lot.
Oh, yeah. There are definitely moments where it is. I mean, because you have different things that you deal with from every group that you're in that you have to face. And sometimes even inside of those groups that you have parts of you that you have to face inside of that group.
And every group wants you to be their advocate.
Exactly. everyone does. And I don't care what race you are. Like if you're this race, but your sexual orientation is this and you have this, but they don't, the race overall doesn't like it, then it's always going to breed conflicts because you're like, but who am I supposed to be fighting for? It's one of those things as to, for me, where I try to keep the balance is understanding, like trying to like mediate to a degree, like, or give like a perspective of understanding because I can understand people from the LGBTQ community. So no, I don't want homophobia in the Black community. I can understand people with mental health. So no, you aren't going to get on, like help these people with who are in the LGBTQ community or in the Black community or in any community, because I don't care who you are. You deal with stuff. We're human. And I feel like that more of us need to start doing that, bridging these gaps, because there's so many bridges that can be built if we would just talk.
People who saw what you did in Tokyo with the symbol and to hear you talk about it again now, that's giving a lot of people a lot of strength. But when you were growing up, where did you get your strength from? Who were the people that you looked to either in your own home or around you when young Raven was trying to work it all out?
I mean, the main person I will say is my mom. the fact of like my mom getting up every day, even having like arthritis and all of this stuff, working, you know, 8+ hour days. And at moments we didn't have everything, but still making a way possible. And even in moments, I remember getting to high school and her telling me, like, after a couple of state championships, no, don't get a job. Like, you don't need to work. Do what you need to do in track. Like, hey, if I have to carry a camel on my back, you're going to college. Things like that just instilled in me like a certain level of not accepting, like constantly being able to work and push past, because things are going to happen, but you still have to get up and keep fighting for another day. And that's where that initial grind came from. And then my high school coach, who's like a dad to me, teaching me along the way of like dealing with challenges and how to deal with that. Also introducing me to his cousin, who introduced me to a form of meditation that really ended up helping me ground myself at that time in high school.
So were there a lot of kids meditating in high school in, was it Charleston?
Oh, I was definitely the weirdo, and kids take like appreciate being weird, especially in middle and high school. It will make your life so much easier as an adult.
embrace it,
because like I'd be doing drills in the hallway and they're like, yo, are you a ballerina? Like, what are you doing? Push-ups in class, like what? Like, this is not PE. But yeah, just doing different things just to try and make myself better every day, though being weird.
Good for you. There's nothing wrong with being weird. I think that's brilliant. We've got a picture of your mum, which we'd love to show you. And we chose this picture because it's a picture of a hug. It's your mum, because your back is to us. So we just see her arms around you and her head buried in your shoulder. And if you can see love in a photo, and that's what we can see there. And people might not know, you lost your mum and you lost her very, very soon after winning your Olympic medal. So how on earth do you begin to talk about what was the highest high point in your life and then something that you didn't expect at all?
Gosh, and I really feel like the fact of me holding up that X was really like for a reason. Because now that I had everyone's eyes on me and I'd been talking so much about mental health and going through the greatest moment, literally to have the worst thing absolutely to happen to me less than 48 hours after the fact, and I am on the complete opposite side of the world. It was the toughest thing. I couldn't believe it. When you go through so much and you achieve something, you expect like everything is just supposed to fall into place after. But I knew that life has a funny way of working, and that after every good thing, you know, there may be something to challenge you just to keep you going. So leading up to the Olympics, I'm like, yo, whatever it is, I'm here for it. And it was a particular motivational speech that was like, you know, it doesn't matter what happens to you. It doesn't matter if you lose your job. It doesn't matter if you lose your mom. What are you going to do about it? And I was listening to this whole entire time going into the Olympics. And after it happened and after the initial like, oh, and tears and stuff, after I was able to like literally be restrained by one of my teammates to let it all out, that popped back up into my head. So it was just, how can I use this pain and this energy and challenge it into something else? Because it's so much that I got to do something with it, because it's literally going to destroy me if I keep it inside. And I knew that from history's past. And I knew that my mom, in that moment of doing what I had just done, the last thing that she would have wanted, especially after like thinking back to the mental health facility that I was in after I was about to commit suicide and seeing her tears as to almost losing her daughter, the last thing that she would want me to do would be go into a deep, dark place, be depressed, be sad about losing her. So I chose to cherish her by continuing on. Like I literally went home, we planned her funeral. And all the while, I'm still trying to make sure that I'm doing these interviews so the kids can still hear my message. Like, yo, I just lost my mom, but you guys got to understand, we got to keep rolling. And I already had a particular plan in place for when I know or when I'm in fear of my mental health being in jeopardy. Therapy. I have to call a therapist. I have to let the people around me know, which at that point, the whole world knew, so everyone knew. I had to make sure that I was taking time to go outside to actually breathe. Make sure I'm not sitting in a dark room for too long of a period. Make sure I'm not oversleeping, forcing myself to wake up. even if I don't feel like it. It was an emergency plan in place that once this happened, I was ready for it.
Those tools that you're talking about, they don't fix the problem, but they get you through it.
They get you through it. Now, everyone has different tools. And I'm not saying that the tools that I have are the end all be all and that my tools are going to be your tools. But you have to come up with an arsenal of tools that you keep in your belt at all times. Because like even on my day to day, like just because I talk about mental health, I don't want anyone to think that like it's always peaches and cream for me. Like, I mean, I recently had an episode not too long ago. But in those moments, also remembering that I'm going to get out. And for instance, I'll even show you guys right now on my mirror so that in the moments of like me not knowing or me not wanting to do stuff, there's things posted around that I can see in my house that is reiterating those things that if I can't even force myself to say it to myself, I can go into this bathroom and still read it off something.
When you're looking for an answer, you've got them up everywhere.
Yes.
And not burying anything, having things front and center and out there whenever you need them. You don't have to look in all the time because you've already put it out.
Yes.
I don't want to sort of do that question that says, do you want to win a gold medal next time you compete? Because I know that you're going to be around for a long time. And I know that the trajectory is going up in terms of your sport. But when the sport part of your career is over, what do you want to do next? What's going to be the thing that drives you when you're not throwing a shot put anymore?
Philanthropy. Being able to like then be done and go around the world and really get a chance to be hands-on with people. I feel like that will be the greatest thing to me. Being able to take a lot of my accomplishments to people just to show and give them insight, because I feel like a lot of people will limit themselves based on the people that they're around, the people they have access to, or the people that they can physically see with their own two eyes. And if I can be a person that can go into like, I don't even want to go in a big city. I mean, just go places that really can make a difference, you know, and do different things, speak about mental health, write books, do speeches, actually mentor people. I feel like, and I've been saying that since high school, that I feel like that's my purpose.
Thank you so much for giving us all of this time. You've definitely inspired us. Well, I loved her. She was great. I want to have conversations like that every week. And I guess we do. So that's good for me.
Yeah, we're really lucky, aren't we? Honestly, when she did her podium gesture, I cannot overstate how scared, and I would use the word scared, generally the sporting authorities and specifically in Tokyo, the International Olympic Committee, were that somebody would do something on a podium that they felt was inappropriate. And the only person who did that, who even made a gesture, was Raven Saunders. And the one she made was about unity. It was about togetherness. It was about recognizing people who don't feel they can, in a situation where they can speak up for themselves. And that kind of kicked open a door for most people who had no idea who Raven Saunders was in the wider world. And what a story. And what a person who's living that story right now.
Yeah, it seems like that gesture was almost like an asterisk. You should go look this up. Look up me. Look up what I'm passionate about. There's more than a footnote about this. You want to know more.
One of the things I thought was really interesting about the rawness and the realness of her story and her experiences, you don't always get that from athletes. And I think one of the things I really admire most about her is athletes always want to write their own narrative. And yet it's very difficult for them to really claim that narrative of what they want to put out in the world. And she's certainly doing that. She's claiming it. She's owning it. She says, this is who I am, take it or leave it, and is just 100% unapologetically herself. And I think I really admire the fact that she's really living that out when that's what everybody says they want to do. And yet she's just 100% herself.
When you say athletes really want to own their own story, what is the obstacle to that? Is it, I guess there's the sport, there's maybe sponsors, there's journalists, a lot of people talking for you. Is that mm-hmm. what you say? What you mean?
Well, or you're maybe you want to speak out about certain topics or issues, but then you feel pressure because either team people, officials, or your own, you know, management team is saying, oh, but you could lose some opportunities, or, you know, let's not create too many waves here, right? And so, and she's just saying, I don't care. I'm not concerned about those things. And everybody says they want to do that, but I can tell you to actually do it is much more difficult.
Yeah, and it's not easier because you're in an event which isn't the 100 meters. It's not easier because you're over there throwing a shot put. People are still going to notice what you do. You're still wearing the national colors of your team. You're still there to represent. You've still got all these pressures behind the scenes and all the stuff that she talked about. And this idea that all of these things intersect with her, all these different communities and the way she expressed that. And actually, this might sound frivolous, but it's not. I grew up reading Marvel comics, and reading comics really gave me this sort of this sense of right and wrong and morality and everything else. So the fact that when she pulls on the Hulk mask and she really lets the Hulk out, look, you're engaging people who've just walked out of the latest Marvel movie or read those comics now who are little kids growing up. Brilliant. It doesn't have to be highbrow because popular culture can bring us all together. And just the whole Hulk thing, it's just another way, like you say, Eliza, it's another footnote. Come and look me up. If you liked this, come and find out some more about me, and hopefully I'll have a conversation with you or we can talk more.
Well, that's it from me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry. And join us next time for more of this. Do people recognize you on the street?
Yes, if I was without mask or without cap. Sometime in India, I wear mask and cap also, and people recognize me. They said, oh, we saw your eyes. Oh. So, and I'm thinking, oh, my eyes are not special.
In Tokyo, he became the first Indian to win Olympic gold on the track. Niraj Chopra joins us on the podium next time.